2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. You can read me at kslsports.com. And if you're listening to this and you haven't downloaded the KSL Sports app, you can do it while you listen. Just open your phone, go to your app store, search KSL Sports and download the app. It's the best way to get podcasts, all my stories, all of our stories on Utah football, BYU football, basketball, RSL, golf, whatever you're looking for. We've got it all for you at the KSL Sports app. So make sure you do that. As always, as I like to do, I try and bring a guest on for the Jazz Notes podcast. Today, our guest is going to be Sarah K. Spencer. She covers the Hawks, who the Jazz are playing tomorrow night for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. So she's going to be joining me in just a few seconds. And then I like to answer your mailbag questions at the end of every podcast. So make sure you follow me on Twitter again at Ben's Hoops. My DMs are always open, so you can shoot me questions throughout the week. I'll try and get back to them when I can. A lot of people have done that, so I appreciate it. Or when I just kind of send out the bat signal that I'm going to be recording this, you can respond to that question as well. And that's where I'm going to get my questions today. With no further ado, here's my conversation with Sarah K. Spencer.
So basically what happened is that a member of the Hawks traveling staff tested positive, and therefore people who had close contact with that person had to isolate. And one of those people, there were several people who had to isolate. One of them included Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce, but he was cleared actually late last night. So he's been able to travel with the team to Utah. And the person who tested positive was not a player. So as far as I know, everyone who is two people have had to stay behind. So the person who tested positive and one person who had very close contact with that person. But everyone else, as far as the Hawks traveling party, who's actually going to be in Utah, has been cleared as far as I know. So I think if this game were to be postponed, I don't think it would come from anything with the Hawks unless something new develops. But I think, you know, and when they were talking about it, they just said, you know, hopefully we have the right people in isolation and we just want to kind of nip this in the bud, because up until now they have been pretty lucky. I know some other teams like Washington have been very unlucky.
Sure.
So the Hawks have been pretty fortunate so far. So they feel like they have the right people isolating. And so hopefully everything's good to go.
I know Kevin Huerter did his media availability yesterday from a hotel room. Is he on the plane or is he going to be left behind?
I don't think any players were left behind. It's staff. Yeah, so I think as far as players, really the main thing that's affecting the Hawks right now is injury report,
right?
Not necessarily COVID protocols. They have a very, very, very hefty injury report, and it's been tough on them the last few games. And you know, they might have a hefty one for a while. So they're just going to have to do the best they can with the guys that they do. But you know, whether it's Bogdanovich, whether it's Danilo Gallinari, Chris Dunn. Rondo has been out a good bit as well. So they're just short, you know.
That's what's crazy. I mean, the guys you just mentioned are all the major acquisitions they made in the offseason that everyone was so excited about.
You know, it's funny. Pretty much the Hawks team that you're seeing right now, for the most part, is last year's Hawks team, right, plus Clint Capella, which Clint Capella is a major upgrade for the Hawks at center. And you can tell, they have shown progress when it comes to rebounding and some defensive categories with playing both him and John Collins. But overall, yeah, you're seeing a lot of last year's Hawks team this year, because all their acquisitions, you know, they went for it in free agency and added a bunch of new faces to the mix. But unfortunately, a lot of those guys have been on the bench or have been out.
So they're 5-5, which is fine. You know, I think early on at this point, everyone's trying to feel the league out, travel, coronavirus. Everyone's trying to figure out just what to expect game in and game out. Again, Bogdanovich played, what, a handful of games? He broke his knee, so that's really scary. But you tweeted there's no further damage?
There's no ligament damage, so I think they're pretty happy about that. They don't have a timeline for him yet. I think it's one of those things where you kind of have to just see how he handles, you know, weight on it, the beginning phases of physical therapy. But he's going to be out at least several weeks. Yeah. So they'll just be out. They'll be without that scoring presence off the bench. He had an avulsion fracture, which I had to look up what that was. I was like, what on earth is that? Did he break his knee? And it's kind of when like a tendon kind of pulls away from the bone a little bit. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of, you know, he's probably in pain, so he wouldn't want me to say fortunate, but fortunate that, you know, there's not an ACL tear in there as well.
And then Danilo Gallinari played basically one game. I know he appeared in two, but he basically only played the season opener. Like you mentioned, Rondo's been in and out. Has Chris Dunn played yet?
No. Yeah. He has been consistently out. He's having some cartilage issues, which I know cartilage stuff can just kind of haunt you for a while there. So he's out, but he's out of a walking boot. He had I guess it's arthroscopic surgery, a while back. And he's out of a walking boot. So on the Bogey front and on the Chris Dunn front, the Hawks got a little bit of good injury news, which they'll take. So those guys are kind of going through rehab and just kind of seeing how they're doing. But for the purposes of this West Coast road trip, the Hawks are kind of on their own without those guys. And Gallo, I think Gallo was starting to really, this was a really young team last year, and this is a team that really could benefit from like some playoff experience and just older guy. And so, he also slows the game down, gets to the free throw line a lot. So he was really kind of starting to mesh a lot with this group, and then, you know, has been out as well. So it's just, you know, the Hawks started out 4-1, for a while they were actually outscoring the Bucks, and just had crazy high flying offense. And then unfortunately, you know, lost four in a row to teams you don't really want to lose to. They were able to kind of, I think, get back on track a little bit. Also just mentally beating, even if it's a depleted Philly team, you'll take it, right? And so they were able to get back on track a little bit. And then, unfortunately, the game with Phoenix had to be postponed. So I think from the hot things, they're still kind of, you know, I'm still kind of feeling out this team, because you've seen that they're high and you've seen them at a low point too.
So what's the thought on Trae Young right now and how he's playing to this point? I know his scoring numbers around 24 points a game, his 3-point percentage is down, but he's being asked to do a lot again because there's been so many injuries.
Yeah, he's been asked to do a lot, and it's kind of weird. When they had Bogey, they were actually playing Trae Young off the ball a little bit more. Because they had the people to do that. So you would see, you know, Bogey feeding Trae Young for a catch and shoot three, you know, which normally Trae Young is always, you know, bringing the ball up or always on the ball. So they were able to kind of do that, kind of open them up a little bit more, I guess. And now he's having to, like you said, he's having to kind of handle more of a load. He started out really, really strong and then had a period of games, which of course kind of corresponds with the Hawks losing streak that they were on, as that kind of tends to go. He had a couple games where his shot just wasn't falling. I don't even know if it was anything specific. I mean, obviously teams are always going to blitz him. Teams are always going to come after Trae Young hard. So that's not even new. So I don't know if it was anything teams were doing or if it's just one of those things that shooters go through sometimes where you're just shots aren't falling from three and it sucks. And right. All you can do is kind of keep shooting and just see what happens. And then against Philly, it kind of evened out a little bit. And he looked a lot more confident. He looked better from the get-go. He hit two, you know, really deep threes. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like he got back a little bit of mojo. So I would look for him to continue kind of turning the corner with that. But his numbers are down because, you know, they've only played 10 games. And so if for four of them you're kind of off your game a little bit, then, you know, your numbers are going to be skewed. But I don't necessarily think it's anything concerning. I just think he just had a tough few games where shots just weren't falling. And sometimes that can get to you mentally a little bit.
I know Jazz fans were taking some interest in the Hawks and some of their young players, specifically John Collins, because there was rumors of a potential Rudy Gobert for John Collins and DeAndre Hunter trade, I think it was. You know, it never materialized, obviously. But what is the latest on the John Collins front? What's going to happen there? They didn't sign him to a contract extension this offseason. There are teams that would want him. He's a very good young player.
Yeah, John is, you know, it's unfortunate. He had talked a lot about not wanting to be in a contract year, but and wanting to stay in Atlanta. But, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of what it came to. And he had also said a few times that he felt like he should be in the conversation for a max deal. To be fair, he had said, you know, sometimes you don't always get what you want. Like, you negotiate and sometimes it doesn't work out that way. But yeah, no. So now he's kind of in a, I guess, a kind of a show me season, you know. I mean, I'm sure the Hawks will be in the mix for him come, I guess, a restricted free agency, you know, when that happens. They're really high on John. I mean, John is an incredibly gifted offensive player. He's only gotten better every year, too. But, you know, last year he was suspended for 25 games. So he was one of the, I think it was one of four guys to average 20 and 10. And then, you know, but it was in a little bit of a smaller sample size because of that suspension. And then you add in something that, of course, wasn't his fault, which is the Hawks season was cut short 15 games because the season was suspended. So he's a very gifted offensive player. He went 4-for-7 from three against Philly. Actually, last year, he led the Hawks in three-point shooting. I think it was 40.1%. So he can stretch the floor, too. He can do some dynamic things. Him and Clint Capella have looked pretty good together. I think there were questions as to how they'll fit and everything like that. So I think they looked pretty good together. I think the question for John is going to be how much more can he improve defensively? And last year, or I guess last season, he did take a step forward defensively a little bit, but, you know, I think they still want to see more out of him defensively. And they also need that team wide, you know, that like the Hawks had a couple of categories they really needed to improve on. And they want to hang their hat on the defensive side. But, you know, they're going to have to buckle down. And I think John could be a big part of that. Especially just, he's the longest tenured Hawk. I mean, this team has had
crazy,
isn't it? And the team has had a ton of overhaul. So he's which I think he laughs at that because it makes him feel old. But really it's just a sign that there have been so many moving parts on this roster. But yeah, no, I mean, I think the Hawks are still, you know, high on John and know what he can contribute offensively and how he can grow defensively as well.
All right, Sarah. So let's talk about something that's been going on. It's kind of funny. The conferences have flipped sides. We'll be quick on this. LeBron was in the East, so all the other good players went to the West. He kind of has this anti-gravity that pushes everybody away from him. And now he's with the Lakers, and every superstar wants to go play in the East. And the Hawks are now having to stack up against Miami, Milwaukee. Brooklyn certainly now is in the mix. Boston's very good. Like, it's crazy, but now you add James Harden to this mix. What's the Eastern Conference perspective? What's the Hawks' perspective on this trade?
Well, it's going to be, I guess, it's tough whenever you have to contend. I mean, the Nets are already a tough matchup, and then you add James Harden, and it's like, well, goodness, you know. Yeah. So they're even more of kind of a juggernaut, I guess, in that way now that they've added him. And, you know, like you said, the East is, you know, becoming more and more competitive. I think for the Hawks, I think at this point, they just are focused on it, honestly, since last March, even in the midst of a losing season is when Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce first said, you know, the next step for us next season is the playoffs. And I think it kind of like raised a few eyebrows at the time just because they were in the midst of a losing season. But that's, you know, they feel like they're nearing the end of their rebuild. And a lot of the players have echoed that sentiment as well. So for the Hawks, I think they're just focusing on that. I think they want to see growth from their young guys. I think they want to see contributions from their new guys. It's also difficult because they have nine new players on the roster and had a week or two to figure all that out, all those moving parts before the season started. So it's, I think that's been tough too, when you're trying to figure out chemistry on a, it was kind of a younger, quiet team. And then you add all these new veterans. So I think from their perspective, I mean, obviously it's a more, much more talented team this year and much more deep, which is good because they needed it from the start. For them, I think they're just focusing on improving and hopefully making the playoffs. I think for me, I would say that the idea of the play-in tournament might help them. You know, depending on where they end up at, you know, when that time comes, it's kind of hard to say right now. Like genuinely, I wish I could give a little bit more insight, but I feel like I'm still learning about this team because I haven't seen it at full strength really. You know, I've seen them be offensively, like, are they ever going to miss a shot? I don't know. And then I've seen them, are they ever going to make a shot, you know, and kind of go through a little bit of a drought too. So I think this team is still kind of has a lot to figure out because it's either been missing so many people or added so many people. But I think depending on where they fall, the play-in tournament, which I'm a big fan of in general, because I think it kind of incentivizes teams late and it's just a fun dynamic that wasn't there before.
Right.
It kind of gives teams that might be a little bit in no man's land, kind of gives them a little bit of a push late in the season. So I think they're just focusing on, you know, improving as much as possible, getting guys healthy. And I mean, the goal is to make the playoffs or, you know, at least compete for it.
There she was, Sarah Kay Spencer, giving us a great breakdown on everything going on with the Hawks this year. Tough injuries. Jazz fans know what that's like. They had such big expectations last season going into the year. And then Mike Conley was slow to start, had his injuries. Bojan Bogdanović didn't finish the season. It's just part of what happens. The best laid plans, unfortunately, sometimes just do not materialize. And we'll see if the Hawks get a chance to a comeback and put it together. But follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah_K_Spence on Twitter. Big thanks to her for jumping on, reader at the Atlanta Journal Constitution. All right, let's get to your mailbag questions. I appreciate everyone sending them in. Looks like we got a handful today. Looks like a couple right off the bat are on Shaq Harrison drawing the defense, and Matt Miller both say, what are your thoughts on Shaq cracking the rotation? Do we think the Jazz, A, try to get out from his contract if he doesn't play, or how do they find enough minutes with him on the floor? I do think eventually the fact that you're going to have guys missing games with coronavirus, contact tracing, and it's not just, you know, Mike Conley or Donovan Mitchell or Jordan Clarkson. It could be anybody that means the Jazz just need to have a 9-man rotation, and that's basically what Quinn Snyder's been trying to do a little bit with 10, getting Mieone in the games recently. But I do think that eventually he's going to find his way onto the floor. Now, again, he joined the team late. Mieone's been with the team for a whole year before this, went through a lot of work in the G League. I think Quinn Snyder's rewarding him. I think Mieone's rewarding Quinn Snyder. I thought he played really well against the Cavaliers in some limited minutes. He's probably a better long-term fit with what the Jazz need, potentially, than Shaq Harrison is. Of course, that could depend on what happens with Mike Conley. Shaq might be an audition this year. You don't give him a long-term contract because we saw what happened with the Jazz last season when they were giving these guys who are not, you know, very good or proven NBA players kind of extended deals with team options that they had to waive or trade to buy out of. You got him in trouble with Rajon Tucker this offseason, and, you know, they had to attach second-round picks and things to move guys around to waive to get into the salary cap. They didn't want to do that with Shaq Harrison. They didn't, and that's a good sign. But I think they wanted to see how he can play and if potentially he could be a guy who could step in and be a reserve or a rotational player when Mike Conley signs elsewhere this offseason, if that ends up being the case. So I don't think they move him. I think they want to have him around. If there's not a cultural fit, maybe that's one thing. Maybe he plays a little wild. Maybe he plays a little loose. You know, we don't know. We haven't seen him very much. But it's early. I would not fret the fact that he hasn't played very much. I know some people were really excited about him signing in the offseason. He played emergency minutes on a really bad Chicago Bulls team last year when they were down all their point guards and played pretty well. But it was not like he was the most proven NBA player that we've seen. I get why he hasn't really cracked the Jazz rotation at this point. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. Tommy Newell, next question. What players on the roster do you not consider part of the Mitchell Gobert long-term plan? Is there a future all-in decision coming where the future is probably compromised, or are we sort of seeing the front office's best efforts? I think the Jazz are all in right now. I don't think that means they're immune from making changes if they have to, but we have not seen this team at full strength with full chemistry yet. And some of that was undone because last season Mike Conley's injuries, which I just mentioned, and then Boyan's injuries at the end of the year just kept them from really getting on the floor. And then you've added Derek Favors into the mix. You've got Jordan Clarkson playing the best basketball of his career because he's figured out exactly what the Jazz want from him. I think they're all in. It just hasn't been a long enough sample size to really figure out what they're doing. So could they make a trade? Yeah, if Mike Conley, you know, was going to leave in the offseason and you wanted to get something for him, or you felt like there was draft picks to get and you could get somebody who could come in on an expiring contract or a deal that you could make work over the next little while, even with Rudy's deal and with Donovan Mitchell's deal kicking in, they could kick that around. I don't expect it, but they could certainly kick that around. But I, as far as being all in, I think there's no question they're all in right now. Richard Barton. What adjustments can the Jazz make against defenses that play high? They scorch the drop defenses and get rattled by high defenses. Worried about this in the playoffs with better scouting. Good question. Some of that's got to come down to what their ball penetration is and making sure they're a little better at it. They've been so bad about turning the ball over. And of course, you're talking about some of the bigs that come up and can switch and can stay out on the Jazz, which is a little bit of a dying trend. You know, the Jazz, I think, have actually been pretty good this season against some of these teams that don't have good rim protection. And I look at a team specifically like what we saw with the Clippers, which, you know, maybe is the Jazz best win of the season. I guess Milwaukee probably deserves to be the best win of the season, but you know, they just do not have, outside of Zubac, a guy who can really sit back and defend the paint. I know that's what Serge Ibaka was brought in to do, but he hasn't done it super well. So I do think it's going to come down to some ball penetration for the Jazz and breaking the paint. I think Donovan Mitchell's early struggles around the rim probably hurt that a little bit and looked bad, but I think it will continue to develop. I actually think Jordan Clarkson's ability to pass out of penetration, which he has not done previously, and he's starting to show some signs of it could be positive. And the same thing goes for Bojan Bogdanović, who I thought has looked a little better off the dribble this year, but maybe that's because he's shooting so poorly. They haven't really found a way to use it. But that's where I would look for the Jazz to start to counter that. Jeff on Twitter says, trade Bogey for Aaron Gordon. That's all. I think Jazz fans have liked Aaron Gordon because that's who they thought they were getting in the Dante Exum draft. Bojan Bogdanović is just a much better player than Aaron Gordon, and I don't know what to say about it otherwise. Yeah, Aaron Gordon's good. He's a fine player. He's never could have lived up to his expectation, nor has really anybody from that draft class outside of Joel Embiid, but Aaron Gordon's just not a crazy good player. He's just kind of a rotational guy, and because he was a lottery pick, Orlando's paid him a lot of money, but Bojan Bogdanović is a significantly better basketball player, and actually I think fits better with the Jazz than what Aaron Gordon does. Aiden on Twitter, Aiden Meyer, not a specific question, but you should talk about any trades you think the Jazz should make before the deadline. I think the only trades the Jazz would make would be to get under the salary cap if they felt like that was pressing, and it would be pressing if they're 10 games under 500 in March when the salary cap or when the trade deadline comes. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to see the Jazz make major moves. I think Joe's looks revitalized and is playing well. I was a little worried about him coming into the season aging because he looked really bad in the playoffs. And maybe he's just not much of a playoff player anymore, but he didn't look very good in that series. We'll see what he can do this year, but I think the Jazz are probably comfortable keeping him around. Royce O'Neal's had some really good games, I thought, this year, and looks like there's still some untapped potential, so I don't think you need to feel any urgency to move his contract, even though it just kicked in this season as well. I think I wouldn't stress about that. So, major moves? I don't think there's something necessary. If you had a point guard that was young that you thought could be available for very little, that you think could develop in your system, which is what my thought was a little bit about why the Jazz signed Yogi Ferrell to that deal so they could sign him to the G League. I think that's what they were trying to do. Maybe they keep an eye on a potential replacement for Mike Conley, but it's probably not the most pressing issue, nor is it something you're going to solve with a minor fix. Carson Lindorf, it seems like the Jazz play well depending on the matchup. No quick scoring guards, big defense. Rather than the talent level of the opposing team, which of the top 10 teams in the West do the Jazz match up with best? And who do they match up with worst? Well, this is a lazy answer, but they match up worst with the Lakers. But that's because they have absolutely nobody who matches up with LeBron James. They didn't address that in the offseason. And that's hard to do. Nobody matches up well with LeBron James unless you have a Kawhi Leonard or, you know, some of these guys who have played against him a long time. So that's hard. That's going to be trouble. The Jazz don't have an answer for that. And then they have a good rim protector in Anthony Davis, who can also switch out and guard Donovan Mitchell, where, you know, Jeremy Grant was good against the Jazz last season, and then he can fly all over the floor. So Anthony Davis is a bad matchup. Ironically, I think the Clippers are a really good matchup. And they're the number 2 seed in the West, right in front of the Jazz, who are number 3, Blazers are also at 3. Suns are also at 3. And the Suns might be a really bad matchup as well as far as the top 10 teams go, because they've got so many rangy defenders. Chris Paul's a brilliant defender. And then Devin Booker can really score on the perimeter, which the Jazz were susceptible to with Jamal Murray last year in the playoffs. So really smart point guard play, especially Chris Paul has just always killed the Jazz, but he kills everybody. That's why he's a Hall of Famer. And then they've got guys like Mikal Bridges who can really defend and then step out and shoot, and they can spread the Jazz out, and then they can move really quick, and that hurts the Jazz because it can take Bojan Bogdanovic out of games, it can take Joe Ingles out of games, it can take Donovan potentially out of games, and then Chris Paul will take a guy like Mike Conley out. So Suns are a really bad matchup. Lakers are a really bad matchup. Otherwise, there's not a lot of teams I look at this season that I think are going to be hard for the Jazz to fit against when they're playing these teams, because as I mentioned, they've played well against the Clippers. They already beat them this season. They had a winning record against them last season. I think the Blazers could probably improve, but the Jazz manhandled them. Maybe that's just recency bias that I think they're going to play well against them. Mavericks, I've never really threatened the Jazz all that much. It feels like Jazz had a couple of good wins against them last season. They're good because Luka's so good, but I think having a guy like Rudy Gobert that can drop back is very helpful against against Luka. If you can turn him into a shooter, you're probably happy. Haven't seen the Warriors yet. We'll see. Warriors could be good. They're 6-5, and you know they started out so poorly and have obviously bounced back. So there's something there. There's something clicking there, and you can't underrate Steph. Spurs, I think the Jazz are going to manhandle this year. Nuggets could be good again, but they lost Jeremy Grant, who's such a valuable piece. And then it's the Grizzlies, and those are your top 10 teams. And, you know, I think the Jazz really match up well against most of those teams. I would worry about the Suns and the Lakers. But good question. It's fun to look ahead already at this point. Otherwise, I think the Jazz match up pretty well, and that's the design you hope to avoid matching up against a team you don't fit well against in the playoffs, and that's really how you advance. All right, moving on to the next question. Matt, should it be acceptable for a $200 million contract player to only get 4 points in a game? Sure. You know, it happens. You know, LeBron James has gone, whatever it is, 1,000 games or something ridiculous with scoring 10 points or more, but he's the best player we've ever seen other than maybe Michael, or he's right there with Michael. And Rudy's job, you know, they don't run plays for Rudy Gobert. I know it's been talked about, but I hope we recognize what that means. The Jazz don't call plays for Rudy Gobert. He sets screens and he rolls to the rim, but it isn't get the ball in Rudy's hands at all costs. That's not how the Jazz operate. So some games, if he shoots poorly at the rim and has a couple of bad bounces and only gets 9 shots. I mean, look at Rudy Gobert. Let's pull him up. I'll pull up his numbers right now. Let's see how many field goal attempts he gets per game, because I bet you it's shockingly low. Rudy Gobert gets 8.5 shot attempts a game. 8.5. Bojan gets 12. Jordan Clarkson gets 13. Mike Conley gets 13. Donovan gets 20. So he gets 8 shots. So does Joe Ingles. Like, we got to recognize that Rudy does so much and scores so efficiently. I know he's only at 11 points this year because his free throws are down. His field goal percentage is a little bit down because he's had a couple of those weird, what do you have, 2-7 game and a 1-5 game or a 1-6 game. That certainly hurt his percentages, and they'll come back. But I wouldn't be worried at all about Rudy scoring and what he offers elsewhere and what he does defensively and what he absolutely destroys what other teams are trying to do. I think you're probably happy with Rudy. And yeah, you want him to score 10 points a game and 20 points every once in a while, but everything else he does is so valuable and helpful for the Jazz that he's more than worth the cost at this point. And I think the Jazz were happy to sign him to the contract they did. I think that's all the questions I'm seeing at this point. I'm sorry if I didn't answer your question, but I appreciate everybody who listened. Again, huge thanks to Sarah K. Spencer covering the Hawks for joining us earlier today, and follow my coverage at kslsports.com.
Years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.